The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Gowton and Jimmy Kemsky.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? This is BGN Radio, episode number 385. It's our first podcast episode, actually, since the start of free agency began. Sorry about that. But we're going to get to a ton of things, both in this episode. We're actually going to, this is going to be a two-parter. So we'll handle all the Eagles' offensive and special teams moves in this episode. And then a little inside baseball. As soon as we're done recording this one, we're going to record another one, which will cover all the Eagles' defensive moves. So we'll break it up into two pods so that it's not like a 2.5 hour episode. Anyway, the Eagles have done a lot of things. We're going to get to all that. But before we do, I'm Jimmy Kemsky from PhillyVoice.com. With me, as always, Brandon Lee Gowton, Linear Nation. Brandon, where exactly can I find the finest meat snacks in the land?
Well, if you're watching on YouTube, Jimmy, which some people should be, everyone should be, really, but obviously we have audio listeners too. At the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel, which you can subscribe to, you can see me pointing down to the discount code BGN at 15 at righteousfelon.com, which, Jimmy, you did not botch when I was not on the show last week. Shout out to our good friend John Stolness for filling in for the free agency preview. We'd had some scheduling issues on our end where I couldn't record because I was in Florida for my friend Zach's bachelor party. So shout out to Zach. Be a lot of fun down there. Good recommendation. Well, I don't know that we went anywhere specifically that you said to go to, Jimmy, but you did say Clearwater was a good time.
Right.
Uh-huh. And it indeed was a fun time down there. Crazy to me how many Phillies fans there were. Like, I know it makes sense because the Phillies are down there for spring training, but it's not even just like at that stadium. It's also pick a random bar in Clearwater off the map,
yeah,
and they're just entirely full of Phillies fans, so it's really cool to see. Anyway,
you go to a game?
I did. Did a doubleheader of the Phillies game against the Blue Jays, which they lost, but whatever. Spring training doesn't really matter. And it was like 5-5, so it was competitive for a little bit before they lost.
Like starters play?
Yeah, we saw the whole. Basically, I think the whole starting lineup play.
Okay.
I think we saw Castellanos hit a homer. So, you know, got to see like some good moments. Flyers
game. Did anything terrible happen when he hit the homer, like elsewhere in the world?
Maybe. Well, later that night, funny enough that you bring that up, the Flyers lost 7-0 to the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Okay, so it's Castellanos' fault then.
And they were down 0-4 in the first like 10 minutes. So there wasn't even like a single thing to cheer about, but it was kind of funny. Anyway, tangent aside, we have so much to get to. Check out our wonderful sponsors at Righteous Felon. Craft jerky by using discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order, as you see on the screen there. Now double too much. I have the banner and the scroller at the bottom, but BGN15 at righteousfelon.com. Okay, Jimmy,
yes.
So much to get into. Where are we starting?
Well, we're going to do offense first, like I said, and you know, we go position by position. Normally, we would start a quarterback, but we got to start with Saquon Barkley, obviously, I think, because that was their splashiest move of free agency so far. I mean, they signed like a guy like Bryce Huff, for example, to a lot more money, plays a more important position. But Barkley, obviously, you know, being kind of a household name in the NFL, 3 years reportedly, 37.75 million. Could be worth up to 46 was the initial reporting from Adam Schefter of ESPN. But obviously, you know, guy that was drafted by the Giants number two overall back in the 2018 draft got widely panned by us too. Like for, you know, take, not that he wasn't an exceptional player, but the value of taking a running back at number two overall is just ridiculous. Racked up over 2000 yards from scrimmage, 15 touchdowns. As a rookie. So he was awesome right off the bat, tore his ACL, missed 14 games. The next year had a, you know, down year when he came back, really good season in 2022. You know, again, 1650 yards from scrimmage, 10 rushing touchdowns, best player on a Giants offense on the team that surprisingly went to the playoffs. And then last year numbers down again, 3.9 yards per carry, which isn't great. Teammates, none of the other Giants backs on the team rush for better than 2.82 yards per carry on that horrid offense that, you know, kind of went through three bad quarterbacks in Daniel Jones, Tyrod Taylor, and Tommy Cutlets. I'm thinking, blanking on his last, DeVito. I blanked on his last name there for a second. Three different quarterbacks and a historically awful offensive line. So, you know, in Barkley, the Eagles think they have added a guy who can do everything, be a three down back, can run inside, can run outside, can run for, you know, can run for explosive plays, can catch passes out of the backfield, and can pass protect, which they haven't had that kind of back in a while, probably since LeSean McCoy. So to be determined if, you know, he is truly on the downside of his career, and we're going to see him continue, like his play continue to fall off or whatever, or if he's kind of rejuvenated by being in a legit NFL offense for the first time, maybe in his NFL career. What are your initial thoughts on, I guess, this signing and sort of the Eagles kind of going out of character by paying a running back a lot of money?
I feel like you and I, we don't always agree on everything, but I feel like we're usually, you know, closer to being on the same page than not. Which isn't always fun for podcasting, but right. It is good for, I think, our collective, you and me, like mental health. I think we're a little, you know, we're a little different on this one. I mean, I have to be true to myself and like former opinion, my previous opinions on Saquon, like over the years doing the NFC East mixtape with RJ Ochoa. You know, I've always felt like Saquon has been overrated. So I don't want to just be like, well, now the Eagles signed him, so he's great. Like, this feels like it's not a genuine opinion at that point. I do think there are some things I like about the move conceptually in terms of you're investing in offense. I like that. You're investing in a player, you know, obviously who has had really good success in the past. There's like a ceiling here that you're chasing. I get it. I just don't think he's been anything close to special for a while now. He was awesome, you know, his first 2 years in the league. It's a long time ago, especially in running back years. And not to say he sucks, and I get that he wasn't playing in an ideal situation with the Giants, so I think he could absolutely, you know, be better here and have more opportunity here because of a better offensive line, at least in theory. Now, you know, we're going to get into the offensive line picture a little bit later. But you know, you don't have Jason Kelce anymore, so there's some question marks there. but just looking at like different kind of metrics, you know, I tweeted out after they signed him, and you know, who knows exactly how much this matters, but PFF has a pro football focus has a metric called elusive rating, which tries to evaluate a running back success independent of the line of his offensive line, which I don't know exactly how they do that, to be fair, but Saquon hasn't been good in those metrics. I was also looking at something a little bit less subjective in terms of yards after contact per attempt. He's not like especially high in that category. Like I'm just, and obviously, you know, there's the eye test and tape and everything. And that's really important. I'm just not seeing like a player who I think is elite anymore. And you're paying elite running back money. I know the guarantee isn't so that you're tied to him forever. It's really, I think, like a two-year deal, basically. So that kind of mitigates the risk to some extent. But I don't think it's a disaster move to kind of sum this up. I just don't think it's also a home run move. And I think I stand by Saquon being overrated, and now overrated doesn't mean bad. I always feel like the need to clarify that. It just, I think the idea of Saquon Barkley, who was the number two overall pick, who was the focal point of the Giants, who, you know, has been a Pro Bowler in the past and whatnot, who certainly has been a big target in fantasy football leagues, who's been really cool in Madden. I think like that, the myth of Saquon, I think, is a little bit better than the reality of him. And I guess part of it is too, I was wrong about the running back market. I thought it made a ton of sense for teams to wait it out because there was
right. They went off the board quick.
That's shocking to me. Like get it because teams didn't need to do that. Teams could have waited. I'm not advocating for collusion here, but I'm just saying like it seemed to make sense that kind of just wait on that market for the prices to come down. But that's not what happened. So I think it's not a disaster move, but I don't think it's a stroke of genius either.
Yeah. So on the, you always felt that he was overrated point. I was actually curious to see like what I had written about him in the past, both in like, you know, like my dumpster fire articles and then also like my Eagles Giants five matchups to watch. Like in my mind, I always kind of like felt that he was still a really good player and very clearly like the guy that you have to stop in their offense. If you're going to stop them or whatever, which I mean, low bar because like they didn't really have anything else like at receiver or tight end or whatever. So you know, my five matchups in you know those articles always centered around stopping him. And then in the dumpster fire articles, I never really made fun of him. Like I always kind of respected his game.
Okay.
And even this past year, it was always kind of like I think this past year it was more about them pissing him off by tagging him and sort of alienating their best offensive weapon and a guy who is objectively, you know, like it was kind of like universally loved in that locker room, respected by all his teammates and that kind of thing. And that's the guy that you're going to pick a fight with. So I've always kind of respected his game. And overrated is, you know, there's probably degrees to that. I tend to agree to some point that he's overrated just because he's such a huge name. He's number two overall pick. And like the season that he had as a rookie was just so insanely good that it was almost impossible to live up to that over the course of his career.
You also have the Penn State, you know, bias too.
Mm-hmm. And there's injuries along the way. So you worry about durability and stuff like that. But here's what I will say. So I think you and I just kind of differ on how good he is.
Okay.
I still think he's really good. You think he's not as good as I think he is, which is fine.
I think he's good. I just don't think he's elite anymore.
Here's what I will say. I've seen people equate the Eagles signing of Barkley to the 49ers trade for Christian McCaffrey. It's not going to be that kind of impact. Okay?
That's the best case scenario, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, even in a best case scenario, I can't imagine that he's going to impact the Eagles offense the same way that Christian McCaffrey impacted the 49ers offense. Because once he got there, their offense just became like a nightmare for some defenses to defend. And, you know, they're hot and cold. If you kind of get on them early and you get a lead, then they're not kind of the same team. But if they get on you and they start rolling, that's a team that can whoop your ass. And I think that all kind of starts with Christian McCaffrey. So I think Barkley's going to have that kind of impact, of course. But I do think that he is an upgrade over DeAndre Swift, who we should probably get to real quick too, who did he leave for again?
The Chicago Bears for the second Bears, year right. Okay. Made the first signing of like the negotiating window / legal tampering. Last year was TJ Edwards. This year it was DeAndre
Swift. That's right. Yeah. But I think he does improve the offense. I think he's an upgrade over Swift and he gives you, you know, he allows you to have a guy stay on the field and also kind of mask what you're doing. Cause you know, like I think he makes you a little less predictable because he can do everything. There's no obvious weakness in his game, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I don't have much more to add on him other than, you know, it's exciting. Like there's different, you know, reactions here. There's a level of it where if you're not like analyzing it from our nerd, you know, podcast perspective, yeah, where it's just fun. It's very fun that Saquon Barkley is on the Eagles. A lot of people did a Penn State rooting interest, and that's, you know, obviously exciting for them to see. He's from Pennsylvania. Now he gets to go up against his former team twice a year. Like, there's a lot of fun to it, and I'm not trying to ruin people's fun because football is supposed to be fun, so I get that part of it too. But from our nerdy podcast analytical right. perspective, I just don't know if it was the most efficient use of resources, and that you couldn't have, you know, done, just because looking at the Eagles' history of them doing more with less at running back, like, it's hard for me to, you know, totally just ignore that and be like, well, now it's so smart and great that they're putting a lot of resources in at running back. Now, obviously, you know, the cap jumping up, I'm sure, helped with this. And they, it's not like they have been not been able to make other big moves in free agency, but still, you know, they still need a safety. There's still things to figure out on the roster. Like, maybe they could have spent more, like, maybe they could have gone after Patrick Queen. Like, there's other things that you are going to be able to measure against this, especially in hindsight, if the resources were properly allocated there. So, intriguing, obviously. Intriguing to see what Saquon could be. I do think, you know, again, best case scenario, which is also a very high outcome, like a very, not in terms of, like, not necessarily likely, but could, I think it could have not the same level of Christian McCaffrey, in part just because the Eagles, I don't think, are ever going to use a player like that. Like, the 49ers, the way they use Christian McCaffrey is just like, I just don't see the Eagles doing that.
Yeah, their offense is centered on him. And you're right. The Eagles aren't going to be that with A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and all them. Yeah.
Even if it was, I just don't think the Eagles are going to have a single player get that many touches. I just, because right. of how they feel about, like, sports science and, you know, that kind of stuff. I just don't think they believe in, like, like overusing a player like that to the point of, like, maybe burning them out. Last thing I'll say in Saquon is that, you know, I don't think this is the DeMarco Murray 2.0, in part because I think the attitude, character, that stuff is better, in part because the contract is more favorable. That was, like, a 5-year deal or whatever it was. And even then, the Eagles were able to pivot off of it. But the one thing that worries me is just that, you know, at this point, and I know it's different situations, DeMarco Murray was coming off of a year where he had, like, 444 touches. That's right. So many. But Saquon has about, like, 300
high 200s, right? Yeah, 280 something, I think it is.
That's where he's coming off of last year. But in his career, Saquon has about, like, 300 more touches than DeMarco Murray did at his point when he joined the Eagles. So that's my point, is that that's a lot of wear and tear. It's a lot of wear and tear on a guy. So again, I think it's not a disaster, but I'm also not ready to say it's a...
On the fun factor point, like, our buddy Gabe, OG blogger, Bounty Bowl, for those of you who used to read Eagles blog, one thing that I've seen him say is, like, you know, my favorite TV show is the Eagles. I like watching the Eagles on TV. It's my favorite TV show. And he does, Saquon Barkley definitely makes the team more fun. Especially just from, you know, adding that player to your offense, but also, like, kind of the side, like, dramatic stuff with he's coming from the Giants and you have, like, you know, their fans are real mad about it. And, like, Tiki Barber's saying, like, you know, you're dead to me, Saquon, like, Saquon gives a shit. I don't know. So all that's kind of like it adds a little fuel to the rivalry and that kind of stuff. So from that perspective, you know, a little also, you know, and I personally, I like the move, but also, like, from that perspective, from our perspective, like, just covering the team, it's awesome. Like, it just adds another very fun thing to cover throughout the year.
Sure. Why don't we take a break here? Because we have a lot more to get to, but let's just go to a break. Throw us a break, Jimmy.
Back after this.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Back here on BGN Radio, which, in addition to Wrong Crowd, sorry, in addition to Righteous Felon, Craft Jerky is also brought to you by Wrong Crowd Beer Company. Fun fact, Jimmy actually picked up his big, I'm going to say order, but what's the term for it?
My bounty of
your bounty. Speaking of bounty, Bounty Bowl, that our good friends over at Wrong Crowd Beer Company hooked us up with, because, you know, they want us to have some of the product, right? And make sure that we're not just evangelizing it blindly, but actually getting to enjoy it and then speak to it, speak to power on it. I don't know. In any case, the point is Wrong Crowd Beer Company. It's really good. You should go there in Westchester. You should also check it out at wrongcrowdbeer.com if you're 21 or older, for sure. In addition to the beer, they have food at the restaurant location in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And Jimmy, what do you do if you're looking for Wrong Crowd Beer out in the wild and you go to a store and they don't have it?
You can order it online, first of all, but then also, you know, wherever you buy your beer, say, yo, dude. Well, first of all, look for the Wrong Crowd Beer. Don't just be like, where is it? And then find it and buy it.
Maybe
buy
it in mass
quantities. and if they don't have it, say, yo, dude, you're missing out, man. You don't have Wrong Crowd Beer here? It's crazy. What are you, insane? Get it in here now, and I'll buy a lot of it, and then everybody wins. So do that. And also, when I picked up the Wrong Crowd Beer, Brandon, we gotten the seltzer. Or is it
there's an orange seltzer, which is, I think, fantastic. I love that. And then you also got the Quarterback Factory.
Quarterback Factory, which is right. Back in the news again, the Quarterback Factory. So I haven't dug into any of that yet. I've had the Quarterback Factory before, but I haven't had the seltzer yet. So I'm looking forward, as the weather gets nicer here, I'm looking to have some of that. And while there, I met Brandon's friend, Paul. Right.
Risk It All Paul on Instagram. Give him a follow.
Brandon was walking a horse down the street in Philly. And when I picked up the beer from him, that dog is like, not only is he huge, he almost kind of has like tiger stripes.
Yeah. He's unreal. And your exact line to me when I walked him up to your car was like, is that a dog or is that a deer?
Oh, it's a deer, right? Not a horse. Yeah.
Well, no, they kind of call him a horse. I mean, any kind of, he does look like a creature you could like ride or see in the wild. He is massive. But he's a great dog.
I took the reins from Brandon on the deer. And when Brandon went inside to go get my beer, and that dog was super chill too.
Oh yeah. Paul's awesome.
Huge dog, but as chill as they come. I was petting him. We were hanging out. So shout out to my new boy, Paul.
That's right. Okay, Jimmy, you mentioned.
Good, that's a good dog name, by the way. I like that. Paul.
Yeah, it is. He is also, it's just him again at Risk It All Paul on Instagram. If you want to follow him, he has the personality of a Paul, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Jimmy, you mentioned, you know, the Quarterback Factory, or I mentioned the Quarterback Factory from our good friends at Wrong Crowd Beer Company.
It's a perfect segue. Yes.
The Eagles themselves continue to be the Quarterback Factory. So I guess let me set this up in that. Okay. There were some rumors out there that the Eagles might be interested in trading, not just rumors, but like, you know, Mike Garafolo, Charles Robinson from Yahoo. There was like credible buzz, I would say, out there from various NFL insiders who are plugged in that the Eagles could be in the market for Justin Fields. And I think some people were like, how could that be possible? And to me, it's like, I don't think it's surprising at all, because this is a team that drafted Jalen Hurts at 52 or 53 overall when they had Carson Wentz. So that didn't really shock me that that could be a possibility. And even as a big Justin Fields, probably the biggest Justin Fields skeptic, rightfully so, and hater and doubter.
That's one we differ on too. I mean, not that I think he's good, but I like the physical ability that he has and can see a scenario where he turns into something, but there are people that are just out. Completely on it. I get that too.
Well, I lean towards being out, but if you're going to take a shot on a backup, you know, and the price, that's obviously a different scenario. I would be more intrigued by that.
Sure.
So in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm open to that. And then obviously the Eagles, or there was a report out there from Rob Motti that they had made an offer to old friend Joe Flacco before he signed with the Indianapolis Colts. So they clearly had interest in a backup quarterback. That kind of was out there. Shouldn't be a shock. In the sense that they were looking for a new backup quarterback, because obviously Marcus Mariota left to sign with the Commanders. I don't really get the sense that the Eagles, you know, wanted him back anyway and shouldn't have, considering how bad he looked in the preseason last year. They might as well have tried something new out. But I think anyone would be lying if they said that they're going to end up trading for Kenny Pickett. South Jersey's own Kenny Pickett. Jimmy, what do you make of this trade?
Yeah, well, first of all, let's get to the trade details. So sure. The Eagles send their third round compensatory pick from the loss of Javon Hargrave, which is 98th overall in the 2024 draft. That goes to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh sends back, of course, Pickett and the 120th overall pick in the 2024 draft. So the difference between those two picks is 22 slots. And also, like, when you look at the trade value chart, the value of the difference of those two picks is actually exactly the 120th pick. Like, oddly enough, it's like a mid fourth round pick. Okay. The value of like that pick swap is the value of that pick swap is a fourth round pick. And they also give up the Eagles had four seventh round picks in 2025. So they give up whatever two of those four picks end up being the best of those picks.
Most
so the highest of those four, the two highest of those four picks after the 2024 season plays out, and they know like what the draft order is, whatever the two best seventh round picks go to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So they trade, you know, they are minus two picks overall on the trade, and they move back a not insignificant number of slots, in my opinion, especially in a draft where it's considered like a weak draft this year, depth in terms of like the amount of good players. I think that's a not insignificant move back. So in Kenny Pickett, they get a guy who was the number 20th overall pick in 2022, which, by the way, was an offseason where the Eagles were shopping for a replacement for Jalen Hurts. Of course, they were interested in trading for Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson. That didn't happen. And then you kind of look at the draft. Was he the first quarterback that went off the board that year? Yeah. So he was like kind of the primary guy that you might pick in the first round. They didn't have interest in him in the first round of that draft. Obviously went in a different direction by taking Devontae. But in his first 2 years, Kenny Pickett started 12 games as a rookie, 12 games as a second-year player, went 7-5 in each of those 2 years. So on the surface, that sounds okay. On a not that great Steelers team. But man, when you kind of dig a little deeper into what he was as a player, first of all, he doesn't turn the ball over at a high rate, particularly last year. He only threw just four interceptions, but 13 touchdown passes in 24 career starts. That's almost an impossibly low number. Like 13 touchdown passes in 24 career games?
Especially when he's not like a big rushing threat either. You know what I mean? Jalen Hurts' passing touchdown numbers are a little bit down because there's so many tush pushes. There's so many rushing touchdowns. He's not supplanting those.
I wonder how many quarterbacks have thrown for like 13 touchdown passes in the span of four games. As opposed to 24, what I mean? So like that, it's not that uncommon for that to happen.
Nick Foles did more than half of that in one game one time.
Right. So also his career yards per pass attempt, really low. It's 6.2 as a rookie and then 6.4 last year. That averages out to 6.3 over his career. Steelers offense averaged 14.7 points per game in Pickett's 12 starts in 2023. 16 points overall, but they had some defensive scores. So 14.7, their offense scored. Suffered a high ankle sprain late in the season, around like week 12, somewhere around there. At the end of the year, he was well enough to play again, but his backup, Mason Rudolph, had come in and played well enough. So they just went with Mason Rudolph. Pickett lost his starting job. So he wasn't necessarily benched, but he didn't get his job back when he was healthy enough to recover from his injury. It does. So like that hit him getting hurt also did coincide with the Steelers firing offensive coordinator, Matt Canada. I forget who took over for him in that offense, but Matt Canada was universally panned as being a terrible offensive coordinator. Not just like, I mean, the entirety of the season and then in previous years too. So yep. I have no doubt that contributed to Pickett's just totally underwhelming you know, playmaking ability, no doubt it's contributed, but I think it's also really lazy to just kind of go, well, it was all Matt Canada, like,
right,
take it had nothing to do with it. So, you know, I don't know. It's not an insignificant amount of draft capital that the Eagles send the Steelers way. It's enough where it kind of leads me to believe, yeah, that guy's the number two. Okay. So like he's the number two. And if Tanner McKee is going to beat him out for the number two job, he's going to have to be way better than Kenny Pickett in training camp and in the preseason games to earn that job, which frankly is a little disappointing in my view, considering the way that McKee played last year in training camp and in the preseason games.
Yeah, on the McKee of it all, I feel like he's not going to get a fair chance to become the number two, because the number of reps that quarterback three gets in training camp are like very few and far between. And also, especially because the Eagles don't practice a lot relative to other teams.
Yes.
And then beyond that, even the reps they do get, it's just like the quality of them is low, because you have a lot of guys in there who are just like not NFL players. Like, they're not going to make an NFL roster. So you're getting, especially, I think, you know, a third string offensive line is a really tough scene a lot of the times, because
receiver is going to be like Greg Ward that
exactly.
you're throwing to.
Or Johnny King, who the Eagles signed like a couple of days into training camp. Like, some of those guys are like in and out of camp because of how he tweaks the bottom of the roster. So I just think it's so hard to kind of evaluate your third string quarterback at that point. I would hope, I don't know, I don't think I'm expecting this. I'm hoping that the Eagles would like rotate Tanner McKee and Kenny Pickett with the second team, so they could each get, you know, second team reps, more high quality reps, and just, you know, a certain amount of reps. But it kind of just feels to me like they might be stacking the deck against Tanner McKee, which I don't really get, because I get that, you know, it's a small sample of what we saw from Tanner McKee last year. And I'm not just saying hand him the number two quarterback job no matter what. I do think it made sense to sign someone else, like more so like Easton Stick, someone who could compete for that job with Tanner McKee and give him actually a fair chance to win that number two job. And maybe that's what the Eagles end up doing. We'll see. Again, I don't really think that's the case. But how is Tanner McKee supposed to get better if you don't give him that opportunity?
Yeah.
You know, like that. And I think to a larger point, that's been the issue with the Eagles when it comes to developing some of these young players. Like, you have to give them a chance at some point. And if you don't give them the chance, then they can't get better. They're not going to get better. You have to give them that opportunity. So that kind of frustrates me. When it goes to the Kenny Pickett of it all, I think you and I are actually on the same page on this one. I think we are like higher than consensus on him coming out. And even going into this past season, I overcorrected a little bit when I said before the season, and I took the cheese for the preseason. You know, Kenny Pickett looked really good in the preseason. He had like, Steelers offense had like five drives, I think, where they played their starters and they scored a touchdown in all five of those. They looked really good. And I went to the lengths of saying that Kenny Pickett will have the leap that everyone thinks Justin Fields will make. Turns out both things are wrong, but and part of that, I think, was just more of anti-Justin Fields than it was a true belief in Pickett. But and also had it more to do with, like, I believed in the Steelers as an organization more than I did the Bears as an organization, just given their track record. But just watching Kenny Pickett, because I felt like I saw a number of his games on the 1 o'clock window, CBS, when I was like waiting for the Eagles to play, because the Eagles, you know, had a billion late games, and just Kenny Pickett did not pass the eye test, man. Like, there was just a lot of bad throws in there. And again, yes, I think the thing with the offensive coordinator and people, the excuse thing, it so falls into line with my more than one thing can be true sentiment that I just feel like people, for whatever reason, don't want to acknowledge. Like, and it goes back to even something as silly but true, it's like Jalen Reagor. Like, well, Jalen Reagor was only bad because the quarterback at TCU sucked. Well, it's like, guess what?
I remember that poor TCU, who actually, you know, went to a national championship game eventually. Exactly. But yeah, that guy took a beating during that draft season.
Anyway, but it's just like, okay, sure, maybe that guy's not great, but also it's possible the player isn't great. Like, it's not just like, oh, Jalen Reagor is an amazing player held back. And that's kind of my issue on a tangent here, but to a previous point about Saquon Barkley, well, he was only bad because the Giants' circumstance wasn't great. I'm kind of like not interested in hearing these excuses. Like, I want to see results at some level, and I don't think okay, getting back to my bigger point, there's a big bridge the gap between Kenny Pickett being like held back by the offensive coordinator and then him being like even a competent backup. That's a large bridge the gap that you're just saying, who's going to fill that gap? Just like Kellen Moore, and who, you know, we'll see how he does in Philly, or the Eagles supporting cast. Like, that's going to make, that's totally going to bridge it. Maybe it does. Maybe it helps him out a lot, but that's not like a small thing to say. It's not just like as simple as like, oh, that's easily rectified. So it's weird to me that they would give up as much for a player who has not really shown a lot of intrigue. Who's also older for.
He's like, older than Hurts. Yeah. He's older than Jalen Hurts.
A quarterback prospect. So it's not like this guy is just like Trey Lance, just like, for example, who's still like extremely young and extremely raw. Like, I think Kenny Pickett's probably closer to his ceiling than many people would like to admit. So I was trying not to hate the move as much as everyone else, but I don't really see the juice factor there with Kenny Pickett.
The upside is that he costs very little.
Sure.
So
his salary.
Well, he's on his rookie contract, so that's going to be what it is. So at least you're not spending money there like you did last year on Marcus Mariota. You know, and with, you know, the signing of all these guys like Barkley and Huff and, you know, right on Devin White, right on down the line. So like maybe you're able to do that to a greater degree because you're saving a little bit on the backup quarterback. So I thought like there were three different buckets that I thought the Eagles third quarterback, you know, whether that was going to be a QB2 or QB3, but it was going to, like, in terms of what they add, would fall into three buckets. One, a guy that comes in to definitively be the number two. Two, a guy that comes in, can be like competent enough where if he has to play, like Tanner McKee just isn't as good as maybe the Eagles hope he would, you know, would become, can be competent enough to play, but also isn't so definitively like, you know, paid highly or costs a lot of capital to get. And like, just isn't so definitively like a definite number two backup.
Like
that
Easton
McKee
Sick.
Couldn't like, and also like Joe Flacco is another example of that, where like McKee wouldn't be given a legit chance to beat that guy out in training camp. And the third would be if they just, you're the number two, Tanner, like Tanner McKee, it's your job. And maybe they draft a guy
like Dane Evans equivalent,
right. Some scrub to just, you know, get snaps or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or draft a guy in like Matt on McCoy. Like day three or something like that. So number three was never in their plans, it seems.
Right.
It was always going to be either one or two.
I think that's it looks fair.
It looks like they did kind of look at both of those types of quarterbacks, but ultimately they landed on, in my opinion, the first option, which is a guy that they're bringing into definitively being the number two, given what they gave up to get him.
And we'll see. You know, maybe we're wrong. Maybe training camp comes along and, you know, again, Tanner McKee and Kenny Pickett are splitting reps more than we thought they would. We'll see. But I don't think that's the most likely thing based on what we've seen, the draft capital they gave up and whatnot. Okay. Any other thoughts on this, Jimmy?
No, I think we move on to receiver.
Okay.
Where they added Devontae Parker. We've seen no activity, by the way, at all from, I haven't anyway, from teams around the league. I mean, I wouldn't expect that for Julio Jones, but also for Olamide Zaccheaus or Quez Watkins, see no, like those guys get no action as far as I've seen so far. But the Eagles bring in Devontae Parker, 9-year vet, 31 years old, also a former first round pick. I think he went 15th overall back in the day to the Dolphins. If you'll recall, he cooked the Eagles in a 2019 game in Miami. 7 catches, something like that, 100 and something, like 40 yards, 150 yards, 60 yards, something like that. Just killed Ronald Darby in that game. And that was a bad team, and the Eagles lost that game. And like that was probably the low point of that season, and then they rebounded and made the playoffs, whatever. But that was his only really good season of Devontae Parker's career. And then thereafter, he had 4 seasons where Warren Sharp put out a stat that said he was, this is next gen player tracking data. Devontae Parker rankings by year on separation. Dead last 2020, dead last 2021, dead last 2022, dead last 2023. Holy crap. Like, it's almost impressive to be dead last in the NFL in separation four straight years. And it doesn't really make any sense either, because the profile of what he is, he's 6'3", 215, ran a 4.45 at the combine. So he's got size and speed. You think a guy like that would be able to generate some kind of separation, but, and I'm not going to, you know, pretend to be an expert on what Devontae Parker's game is. At some point, like, I'll cut up all his targets last year and get a better idea of like what he is. But I think that just kind of says that he's not a good route runner. It's probably my, my not knowing, you know, likely takeaway from, you know, just reading that stat. So in my mind, that guy is not someone that you pencil in as your third wide receiver, and is probably just, he's probably a lot more like the lottery tickets that they signed in bulk last year. He's one of those guys where maybe he get, like, they signed like seven or eight guys, and their feeling was, okay, if two of these guys pan out, great. And if not, then, well,
we it probably, turns out none of them pan out.
Right. If none of them pan out, well, that's not good. But if two or three of them pan out, then great. So I think he's just one of those kinds of guys that they signed last year and is guaranteed nothing when, you know, training camp and the regular season roll around.
Yeah, I think it's clear that they hope that he doesn't work out. Now, it would sound silly because you're signing him. Obviously, best case scenario, he's great. But realistically, I think the expectation is you bring him in and he helps kind of raise the floor at that spot. And I think ideally you draft a wide receiver who will then outperform him. So then you feel good about, or you feel comfortable with cutting Devontae Parker, because you're paying him what, the veteran minimum. So you're not really, you know, giving him anything significant anyway. You
can easily... the Pats cut him, and there's offsets on that. So they all they had to do was pay him. He was going to get the veteran minimum no matter where he went.
Right. So yeah, I'm fine with it. It's a little bit of a weird fit in the sense that he's not a slot receiver. He's a guy who played on the outside more than both AJ Brown and Devontae Smith last year. And I don't think it's all of a sudden like, well, now we're just going to put Devontae on the outside. We're not going to put Devontae Parker on the outside and then have Devontae Smith move into the slot more, a ton more, or AJ a ton more. I just don't really see that realistic. It also, you know, doesn't make the most sense from Devontae Parker, not a guy who's going to help out on special teams. Now, you know, they did have that Julio role last year where they kind of had that guy on the roster, and Quez really too, who, like, these receivers who were number three kind of receivers, but not really big special teams guys. So they've done that in the past. It's not necessarily a deal breaker, but, and it does provide depth on the outside, which you kind of need more than none at all. Certainly, God forbid something happened to AJ or Smitty. I guess I should really start calling him to clarify from Devontae and Devonta ultimately. but yeah, I mean, honestly, I would kind of like to see like Britton Covey get a legitimate chance at kind of getting some more offensive snaps and like being that slot kind of guy, especially with how well he's performed as a punt returner. I think he's kind of earned the right to get a little bit more of a role in the offense. But in any case, yeah, I think the Devontae Parker signing is fine because you're kind of raising the floor at that third receiver spot. And look, it's not like you were getting anything much out of that spot anyway last year between the trio of guys you mentioned. Although, again, I do think Olamide Zaccheaus kind of deserved more of a chance than he ultimately had. But by the way, I mean, this seemed obvious at the time too. It's not just hindsight. The idea that, you know, Quez Watkins got that big bump, you know, what's the name of that?
The PPE.
Yeah.
Player performance escalator. Yeah.
The fact that he got that and made what, almost 3 million, like 2 point something million. Yeah. And they were just like, yeah, this is cool. Like, no, that was terrible. That was obviously terrible decision. Like in the anyway, I don't need to relitigate that. But in the past, they did that with Rasul Douglas and like made him to take a pay cut to stay on the team.
Yeah.
They should have been better about trying to get Quez off of the roster or getting him to take a pay cut. In any case, which is evidenced now by no one having interest in Quez Watkins. I'm sure he'll sign during this podcast or something. But yeah, so it's fine. It's whatever. I think, again, ideal The realistic ideal circumstance is that he doesn't make the team because a rookie beats him out.
On that PPE note, not the same thing, but we'll transition here to tight end. The Eagles had a decision to make on Jack Stoll on whether or not to tender him as a restricted free agent. Had they done that, it'd have been a hair under $3 million. So kind of similar to Quez, like 2.9 something. And then, you know, another team would have been free to sign him, and the Eagles would have had a, right of first refusal. Obvious decision there was not to tender him at that number. In the past, what the Eagles have done in those situations is they've just offered like a guaranteed salary to those players, but at a lower number. Mm-hmm. And typically those players are like, done, thank you, we'll do that. Mm-hmm. And they wind up playing for the Eagles for a year, and you see what happens after a year or whatever. In this case, the Eagles did not tender Jack Stoll. He signed for the Giants. So Jack Stoll is no longer an Eagle. The Eagles' depth at tight end is now Dallas Goedert, Grant Calcaterra, and then Albert O, who I don't know if we talked about him when they re-signed him before free agency. Who cares? But like, anyway, he's your third tight end right now. So I always kind of looked at Jack Stoll as more of like a third tight end than a number two. I mean, he was the number two tight end in the Eagles offense, but just in terms of what he was as a player, I thought he was more of like a TE3 than a TE2.
Ideally, like, yeah.
The idea that he was a great blocker was probably a little overstated, in my opinion. He was a good blocker. What's that?
I'd say he's above average blocker.
He was fine. Like, he was fine as a blocker. He wasn't like, it's not like he was out there like pancaking guys left.
He was mauling people left and right.
Right. And as a receiver, like almost no production whatsoever. I don't have the stats in front of me, but he had like 200 receiving, not even, like, I think under 200 receiving yards in his 3 years with the Eagles. So whatever, he was like, and I like talking to Jack Stoll in the locker room, nice guy, but I think his departure, I would look at that more as like, okay, I think the Eagles liked him a little more than they probably should have. And now that he's gone, it opens up an opportunity to bring a player in to upgrade on that spot and actually become somewhat of, I mean, the tight end too isn't going to be a huge factor in the Eagles offense, just generally speaking, with Devontae and AJ and Goddard and now Saquon Barkley in the mix. But nice to have a guy in there that when the ball comes his way, he can make a play. So I think it does open up the opportunity for them to add a legit, you know, new tight end. And I suspect that'll probably happen in the draft.
Yeah.
And like we saw, like Dallas Goedert has been in the league longer and is older than Zach Ertz was when they drafted Dallas Goedert and when Brent Celek was when they drafted Zach Ertz. So they're about due, based on their history, to take a tight end with a somewhat early pick.
And Goddard's had some injury issues too in past seasons. So, you know, you have to invest more at that spot anyway, because otherwise you just have, like you said, Grant Calcaterra, who's had his own injury issues and hasn't really done much. And there's also more of, I think that's kind of, you know, mildly interesting that, you know, Calcaterra is more of a pass catcher. And same thing with Albert O. Those aren't like guys who profile. Now you still have Noah Tongeiai too. I guess you could say he's more of like a run blocker guy. I don't know. Whatever. Also kind of like a fringe NFL player anyway. As kind of all those guys have been to this point. It would be nice to get a second tight end. I would say that Jalen Hurts kind of trust at some level, because I think it was incredibly apparent that,
yeah,
I mean, they honestly just haven't had that at all. I don't think Stoll was one of those guys either. Calcaterra hasn't been one of those guys. Albert O certainly wasn't one of those guys. There was, I think it was, I forget what game, there was maybe a couple games or at least one game last year where Albert O was like open, wide open.
He ran like a 15, 20 yard out route and was just wide open.
Yeah.
And Hurts got hit on that play. So, you know, there was maybe some wiggle room for, you know, forgiving that, you know, missed open receiver. But then there was one where Jack Stoll was running wide open down the field, and it was pretty clear that it was like right in Hurts's line of vision. It just did not pull the trigger, because I don't think he trusted, you know, those backup tight ends to make plays.
And that's a larger sentiment too. It's not even just about the one play, like what he's getting hit, whatever. I just think,
right.
You gotta, I'm not saying you have to feed, you know, force feed those guys, but like, it's tough. And this is a bigger Jalen Hurts conversation, but it's just tough to me when like a guy who's wide open isn't a real option. Like that has to be a real option. It can't be. I don't want to hear like, well, what are you going to want him to do? Throw to Albert O. If he's wide open. Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do want him to do that. If he's literally wide open and no one is covering him, like that has to happen anyway. Sorry. But like,
that's... a team like the Cowboys, I think does a good job of that where, you know, they have their own like legit playmakers like CeeDee Lamb and now like Jake Ferguson. But in the past, like they've done a good job of getting like their backup tight ends involved, especially on like third down plays where like opposing defenses are really keying in on CeeDee Lamb or whoever the running back was at the time. And then they just kind of run a little waggle, second tight end just kind of leaks out into the flat, totally uncovered. And then they get an easy first down. So I think that's kind of a way that, I mean, Kellen Moore, who was in Dallas for so long, can kind of get a guy like that involved.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take another break here, Jimmy, but not before we talk about Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors. If you're looking to buy, sell, or rent a house, what do you do?
Yeah. 856-906-9295 is where you can reach Kristen Roach. Spring is coming. I mean, the weather's been awesome. Like the last 3 days, it's been over 70. Got some good walking and running in there last 3 days. I had over 20,000 steps each day the last 3 days, Brandon.
Nice.
So weather's nicer. People start thinking about, putting their home on the market or at least kind of seeing what it would go for. They start kind of looking around for, new homes or whatever. This is the time of year that like kind of there's a big influx of houses on the market. So even if you're just looking to see like what your house could be worth, like what it could sell for, throw her a text or a call, say, I'd like a market analysis, please, Kristen. And that's no charge. She'll do that for you. But also if you're looking to just put your house on the market or look around again, call or text her 856-906-9295.
Back after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Back here on BGN Radio, wrapping up the offense / special teams portion of Eagles activity mostly since the new league year started, but really since the last BGN Radio podcast was recorded last week. Jimmy, we're left with offensive line to start with. So the Eagles kicked off the legal tampering period by doing something they could have done before legal tampering, which is ultimately, or like right around there. In any case, on Monday, I should say, the Eagles kind of kicked things off by giving Landon Dickerson a big contract extension and not unexpected. And I think a lot of people, made the same point here that, the timing of this extension comes before Devontae Smith gets a contract extension, not because the Eagles hate Devontae Smith and they're not going to re-sign him, but because Devontae Smith was a first-round pick. So you have the fifth-year option that you can exercise on him, which means it is less time is of the essence kind of needing to re-sign him immediately, whereas Landon Dickerson is entering the 2024 season prior to his extension in a contract year. So you kind of want to get that done, and you want to get it done too, ideally before free agency, because as we've seen with some of these, I think, quite frankly, like ludicrous guard interior or offensive line signings, like Robert Hunt getting like what, like $100 million or whatever. Like there's some crazy,
I didn't see that.
Yeah. Like there's been some crazy guard offensive line contracts in free agency here. So I know the Landon Dickerson deal was a lot of money, but I think it aged well instantly.
He's heading into or was heading into the final year of his rookie contract. And like you also don't want to screw around with that at guard specifically, because at the end of his contract, if you want to tag him, so the NFL does not differentiate between offensive tackles, guards, centers. It's just offensive linemen. So basically what you're paying a guy that you tag, whether they're a guard, center, or tackle, it's like the average of the top five salaries offensive line, but they're all going to be tackles. Like,
yeah, it's tackle spoiler, money.
It's all going to be like you'd be paying Landon Dickerson elite tackle money. Like the Commanders, dumbass Commanders did that like Scherf a few years back with Brandon Scherf. Mm-hmm. It's just ridiculous. Like they're tagging a guard at elite tackle money. And I understand Scherf is a good player, but whatever, blah, 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 blah. Like you get that. They did a bad job of not getting that done sooner. So the Eagles do that. They actually made him the highest paid guard in the league. I don't know if it's been surpassed since then, but at the time they got it done, he was the highest paid guard in the league, which totally fine, by the way. Like the cap went up. So it's not like the percentage of their cap that goes to Dickerson is going to be that much higher than, I mean, probably it's probably lower than, who was it before? Was it the Falcons guard, Lindstrom?
Yep.
Did I have that right? He was previously the highest paid guard in the league. I would imagine that when he got his deal done, the percentage of the Falcons cap was probably higher to him than Dickerson's deal with the Eagles was because the cap went up. So as the cap continues to rise, all the contracts around the league are going to rise. And then to your point on Devontae too, it's actually kind of both sides on that. The Eagles don't necessarily have to be in a rush on that. I'm sure they would have liked to have gotten something done.
Sure.
But from the other perspective, Devontae and his camp aren't going to be in a huge rush too, because they want to see like what the receiver market's going to do. Calvin Ridley got $23 million a year. Mm-hmm. Like he had basically had very similar stats to Devontae in 2023, but of course Devontae is what, like 4 or 5 years younger than Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, Calvin Ridley is going to be 30 this year, I think.
Could be, yeah. So Devontae, yeah, I believe is four years, maybe five, but I think 4 years younger than Calvin Ridley. So you know, Devontae has way more value than Calvin Ridley, and right. Calvin Ridley just got $23 million a year. So from Devontae's perspective, also kind of makes sense to wait around a little bit and see what happens with the wide receiver market. Who signed him to that again? There's some Titans. Reckless. The Titans have just been reckless.
The Titans, too.
Some of the things they've done.
It's different GM, but like it's just insane. Still, that's the same. At some level, it's the same ownership. So they're signing off on these things. And they wouldn't sign off, apparently, on the A.J. Brown extension, who is still right. Like 25. But you'll give up that money for Calvin Ridley going into his age 30 season. It's like, and then have to give up, or no, they didn't have to trade. But it's just, it's insane. It's a wild, but whatever.
The same signed team, Dillard for
say the same team that signed
like Andre $10 million a year last year. They caught him already.
Predictably awful move at the time. Eagles thanked them for the compensatory pick, at least the helping the formula. But yeah. So that's why Devontae's not signed. But Landon Dickerson, I think Dickerson's been like maybe a little bit overrated just from a sense of
Pro Bowl into the last 2 years. And
yeah, and I think at least last year's was like a little, I think it was a little generous on that. That seemed to kind of be like, because the Eagles offensive line as a whole is so good, he's kind of gotten like, you know, a little bit of a boost.
Right.
Because of that, just the name recognition. Again, not saying he's a bad player. Is he the best guard in the NFL?
He's very clearly a good starter. He's no good starter.
Is he the best guard in the NFL? No, I don't think he's the best guard in the NFL, but whatever. It's fine. It's a fine deal. You know, hard to complain with investing resources in the offensive line. He's been way better, I think, than admittedly, I thought he would be, just from a standpoint of knock on wood to injury. Like that was a big concern about him. And I think reasonably so going into the NFL, considering how he had like multiple significant injuries. So, you know, good for him. Good for Landon Dickerson. That's fine.
Yeah, they've taken some swings on injured guys in the second round. Did not work with Sidney Jones. Did not work with Sidney Jones, not Sidney Brown. Did work with Landon, so they're one for two on that in, you know, recent second round injury guy swings. Also offensive line, they signed Matt Hennessy, which you may recall back in the 2020 like pre-draft season, he was like a popular pick, like, you know, second, third round kind of guy to mock to the Eagles as a eventual Jason Kelce replacement, you know, one of many of those. That was, of course, before they drafted Landon Dickerson and then more recently Cam Jurgens. He instead went to the Falcons, third round pick, did not start his first year, started his second year at center, was the starter at left guard, had a knee injury, and then he missed like a lot of time during the 2022 season, and then he missed the entire 2023 season with a knee injury. So a little bit of a disappointing career for him in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. But he comes to Philly, where he's from, went to Temple, of course. And, you know, somebody mentioned this on Twitter, so I don't know who to give credit to, but this was dead on. Like, I think his early career sort of trajectory is reminiscent of Stefan Wisniewski,
okay,
who was an early-ish pick, also from the area, like went to Penn State,
mm-hmm,
was an early-ish pick of the Raiders. I think he went second round to the Raiders, maybe third, but I think second. You know, kind of a disappointment there. Played center and guard for them, kind of like a, you know, unheralded signing by the Eagles in free agency, and has that, you know, interior offensive line versatility, and wound up being a pretty big factor for the Eagles in their Super Bowl. He's a starter for the Eagles for the, you know, during their Super Bowl season after, mm-hmm, Isaac Samuels really got off to a horrible start that year. So we'll see what Matt Hennessy brings to the table for the Eagles, but they didn't have any kind of backup center on the, like Landon Dickerson could do it in theory, but they didn't have a backup center coming off the bench.
Yeah.
Now they do. So they have, mm-hmm, Hennessy who can do that and also play guard. Very logical signing, in my opinion.
To take the Wiz comparison a little further too, if I'm not mistaken, you know, part of the reason he didn't like go back to the Raiders or whatever is because they had different regime changes, you know? So, and that's what, okay, the Falcons have now with, you know, Raheem Morris there. So, you know, new coach, kind of want, they have their own ideas. So, yeah. I mean, conceivably he could compete for the starting right guard job, right? Like that's because we don't know who's going to be. I mean, we're assuming Tyler Steen is the favorite there, but you and I think both would agree that like, he might just be a tackle, or he might be a lot better at tackle than he is at, yeah, guard. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. That's still a question mark, assuming that, you know, it's Jordan Mailata at left tackle, Landon Dickerson at left guard, Jurgen sliding over to center, and then Lane Johnson.
More competition there at a minimum. And then they'll probably draft, yeah, a guy that with either like center guard versatility or tackle guard versatility.
Right. But, so interested to see how that shakes out, but certainly good to at least, again, different kind of player, different kind of situation, but I think you're raising the floor a little bit at the guard position there. I think you're saying that if all else goes wrong, if Tyler Steen can't cut it or whatever, at least now we have Matt Hennessy in the building. Maybe he can start there, depending on, again, who else they add and whatnot, but certainly needed it because you also lost some of your offensive line depth here. And, you know, Suopeta goes to the Buccaneers. He was your top, mm-hmm, backup guard last year, started, yeah, six games. Was a decent player to have around. Wasn't an ideal starter, and I think you saw that with how the Eagles' run game like directly kind of fell off with him in the lineup versus Juergens. But still, someone got a guy who had experience, wasn't the most versatile player in terms of, you know, he only played guard, didn't really have that tackle versatility, but still a good...
Or center.
Yeah, or center, but a good backup to have around. He's gone now. Jack Driscoll's still out there. We'll see what happens with him. Maybe he can bring him back. Who knows? We'll see. But they needed more depth on the offensive line, so they got it. Matt Hennessy, totally fine.
You mentioned Sua out. Yeah, I mean, he was, like you said, he was a guard only. Mixed results with him whenever he had to start. Actually, he had, I thought, two good games when he first started in 2023, and then,
yeah,
some really bad ones thereafter.
I mean, they won games with him, you know?
Yeah.
Like, to be, mm-hmm, fair, like it wasn't like he was such a liability that they couldn't even win.
He's a four-year player. He played like he's been on the team the last 4 years. So you kind of, that's kind of like an under the radar guy. It's been here like a substantial amount of time, mm-hmm, and good for him that he found,
yeah,
you know, somewhere to go in Tampa. But yeah, I think they were ready to move on from him. I don't have anything else on the offensive line.
That brings us to a very special part of the podcast, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Where we talk about the Eagles specialists, where they, I guess, should I say the best thing, the biggest thing for last? So, okay, so they sign in order, really, chronologically, they, mm-hmm, sign Braden Mann to a 2-year contract. Braden Mann was a really nice pickup, I thought, for,
sure,
the Eagles, especially because, I mean, they didn't directly snooker the Steelers, but the Steelers kept Presley Harvin, who they later just cut, I think, at the beginning of this offseason here after the 2023 season, because the Steelers picked him over Braden Mann, who clearly was I mean, he wasn't amazing. He's not like, you know, Pro Bowl or anything, but
he was seventh or eighth in punter EPA. They had a good year.
I thought he was on the like 13th. I thought he was around there. But point being, he was above average. He's certainly a big upgrade on Aaron Sabas, which was the goal. It's just like find a punter who isn't terrible and isn't a liability. That was all you needed to do. The Eagles did that. He's around for two more years. He also had that, you know, that completion on the fake punt pass to Lamide
Zaccheaus. Oh, yep. That's right. I forgot about that.
So, and that was a good pass. So, like, you know, can spin it a little bit.
Athlete.
Yeah. So, Brady Mann liked what we saw out of him. Has a leg, too. Like, you know, some of those, I remember he had some big punts, I feel like, last year in terms of the power. So, yeah, glad that he's going to be around. You have your franchise punter in place. Any thoughts on him?
Well, I mean, he was not only good, like you mentioned, he has big leg. He can, you know, he was certainly a way better leg than Aaron Sipos, but he was also like, I wouldn't say he was great in like the pin deep situations. Like you didn't see him like down the ball, like at the two, mm-hmm. like Donnie Jones and Brandon Boykin used to do regularly. But he only had one touchback on the season, one. So like, that's pretty good where he didn't put it in the end zone, you know, more than one time. That's pretty good. So, yeah, I mean, I think they found a legit punter that they just don't have to worry about it for at least the next 2 years.
And then they only re-sign Rick Lovato, who is one of the four remaining Super Bowl
that's
52
right.
winners on the Eagles roster. And also Rick Lovato justified one of my favorite things about after the Eagles won the Super Bowl was Rick Lovato going on like some random radio station, I forget where, but he talked about how the Eagles ran a fake scrimmage before Super Bowl 52 in the stadium itself, US Bank Stadium, because just in case the Patriots were up to their old cheating ways that the Eagles were running fake plays so that, you know, if the Patriots were trying to cheat, then they would kind of not really be getting a benefit because they would be looking at fake plays. So I like that story from Rick Lovato, and also follows up on a story that I was trying to do early in that week when I was at media night, where I asked all the players on the Eagles roster, or a lot of them, not every single one, were the Eagles worried about the Patriots or planning to safeguard against that at all? And obviously they denied it at the time, but I ended up being true because of what Rick Lovato said. Anyway, Rick Lovato, as the Eagles long snapper, is back. You and I pointed out that he had a forced fumble, yeah, which is more than a lot of other players on the Eagles roster last year. Yeah. It was his first career forced fumble. So you don't want your long snapper, you know, getting in the mix too much down in coverage, but I guess it's nice to know that if he does, he can do that. Yeah, but only 1 year, which I thought was a little bit interesting because, you know, Mann got 2 years. So maybe they're kind of evaluating him again in 2024. That's all I got.
He had more forced fumbles for the Eagles last year than N'Kobe Dean, Shaq Leonard, mm-hmm. Zach Cunningham, Kevin Byard, Reed Blankenship, Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett, Nolan Smith, James Bradbury, and Darius Slay combined. That's how good Rick Lovato is.
Put him out there on defense, baby. Get him some linebacker reps.
That's right.
Yeah, so he's back for at least one more year. You know, good finding after having to move on from John Dornbos. And then also keeps the total field goal operation together, right, in terms of the snapping to the holder to the kicker with an extension for Jake Elliott, who, as I've said, I think has a rightful claim. I don't think you can't say he's the undisputed best kicker in the NFL because Justin Tucker still exists, and Justin Tucker had a down year last year.
Yeah.
So this is why I think he has a claim to it, but you can't say undisputed. And also because the Cowboys kicker apparently just doesn't miss field goals. I know he did late in the year. Otherwise, you know, that guy could potentially be really good, but he's up there because I also think you have to account for the fact that Jake Elliott, incredibly clutch, arguably the team's MVP last season with how he made a bunch of big kicks and big spots.
Yeah.
Didn't miss an extra point last year other than week one when they were playing the Patriots in those extremely like rainy and windy conditions.
Oh, right. Yep.
So other than that, which is like, I think a significant market growth for him because in the past, you know, the book on Jake Elliott was like, he makes these ridiculously tough and clutch kicks, but then he'll like miss a couple extra points. He'll miss like the easy ones, the gimmies a little bit. But he got better there. Yeah. I mean, Jake Elliott's awesome. And now he's being paid. He's tied with Justin Tucker now for the highest paid kicker in terms of annual value. And I think that's fair because he deserved it. And you don't want to be looking for a new kicker when you have him in the fold. He's, again, there hasn't, knock on wood, there hasn't been, I think, a single situation in his entire career, when you think about this, where he's missed like a clutch kick, right? I'm pretty sure that hasn't happened ever, which is insane, because like even the best kickers can miss those kicks. It's going to happen at some point, I'm sure, but it doesn't happen with Zeke Elliott.
He was 7-for-8 from beyond 50 last year too. Mm-hmm. And like three monster kicks, like the 61
in the wind. Yeah.
The 61 yarder into the wind at the end of the first half against the Vikings was an insane kick.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't just like a little bit of a wind. It was blowing and 61 yards into the wind. Like he had to hit that really low. And after the game, he said in his mind, he's like, I'm not making this kick.
Well, that was like the Bills game too, right?
Because he had to do the Bills one, game that was in the rain, also into the wind. That sent that game to overtime. They lose that game if he doesn't make that kick, obviously. So then, and then also he had the 54 yarder to beat the Commanders in overtime. So, I mean, he's a guy who like legit changes the outcomes of games. Yeah. Like that Eagles Bills game, they lose if he doesn't make that kick. They have one more loss in the standings if he doesn't make that kick. And then if he doesn't make the kick against the Commanders, that's more than likely either going to be a loss or a tie. Mm-hmm. So like he was good for, you know, at least 1.5 games in the standings last year.
Just directly. Yeah. Like at the end of games, not even accounting for, you know, the field goals that he routinely is making during the game that are taken for granted because he's just been automatic. Really interesting. Well, not like when you look at the arc of his career, obviously just such a out of nowhere signing back in 2017. Mm-hmm. Eagles need a kicker because Caleb Sturgis gets hurt, and Caleb Sturgis at the time also had like proven to be like a good kicker. Like he looked like he was on a really, you know, promising path at that point. But he comes in, he's awesome. Eagles won the Super Bowl with him, obviously. And then he had a down year in 2020, and I saw some people kind of like trying to old takes expose my tweets about him in 2020. That's fine. But like he was legitimately bad that year. It wasn't like he wasn't bad. Like he was. He was really bad in that 2020 season, and the Eagles had just given him a big contract extension the year before, and they kind of rushed to it too. They didn't need to because he was going to be a restricted free agent. Like they didn't have to rush to do that, but they did, and ultimately it worked out. But for a little bit there, it looked bad. And also, wasn't there an offseason in there? I guess maybe it would have been 2020, 2021, where they brought in competition for him because he had been struggling.
Yeah,
I forget who they brought in at the now that we're saying that. But there was someone, I'm pretty sure.
I don't remember who it was either, but I do recall that happening, yeah.
So, like, my point being, it wasn't just like he came in and he was always awesome and then it was that simple. No, like, he was great to start. He kind of took a dip, and it kind of made you wonder if he's going to be able to rebound. And he did. Not only did he rebound, like he had a career year last year. And it's really a shame that Brandon Aubrey did exist because he should have made the Pro Bowl. He didn't make the Pro Bowl.
Sure.
He did make second team All Pro, but you really could have made first team All Pro again if Brandon Aubrey didn't exist and get to kick in a dome for most of his games, which is like a massive advantage over Jake Elliott. Anyway, but glad to see that Jake Elliott will be around. I think, like, is it fair to say, like, underrated leader on the team? I know he's just the kicker, but, like, he's a guy who's been there for a long time. You know, again, one of these a member of the Super Bowl winning team.
Sure, you mentioned Rick Lovato in that vein. It's him, Lovato, BG, and Lane. They're the only guys left from that Super Bowl team.
He's a captain. He's one of the team captains. Mm-hmm. He's known as being, like, one of the best. I think he's one of the most respected players on the team. Is that crazy to say?
He whoops everyone's asses in other sports.
Yeah, like ping pong and golf and all that, like all those things. But I think that like matters.
Baseball is another one.
Yeah, I think I don't know how much it matters ultimately, but I think he's part of the leadership. I think he's part of the leadership on the team.
I think they view him as more than just like the dorky kicker.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like he's a guy who has credibility in that locker room.
Yes.
I'm not saying he's like getting up and in front of the team and, you know, rah-rah speech, but I think like guys look at him as someone who, is part of the core of the Eagles. So good to keep him around. Okay. Jimmy, this is part one of part two of our marathon of two different pods. So I don't really think we need to get deep into final thoughts here, but do you have any, I guess, final thoughts, not so much general, but on just anything of what we talked about today?
No, I think we pretty much covered it all. I would say just overall looking at what they did offensively, it's hard to say that they got Like when you just look at overall, you know, additions and subtractions, the loss of Kelce is just so huge. Massive. So I can't say that the offense got better. Spoiler, when we get to the next episode, I do think the defense got better, but in just offense, they probably weren't going to get much better because they lost Kelce, but I thought they did. I would say disappointing at receiver, what they've done there so far. You know, you and I differ on the resources Saquon. That went to Saquon, but obviously they're better with him there than they were with DeAndre Swift. And, you know, quarterback can kind of definitely quibble on that one a little bit. But I think the offensive line move with Hennessy makes sense, and certainly locking up Landon Dickerson is a good thing. So, you know, I would just kind of give him a passing-ish grade offensively. Well, but
throw out a letter. Why not? Who cares? More,
C+.
Okay. Yeah, I would say above average. And I think the Kelce thing, like, I mean, we have to grade it through the prism of ultimately what do they do, right? Like, what, like, because they can't control, they can't make him not retire. Like, that's just, that is what it is.
Right. It is what it is. Yeah. He's old and, you know.
So we have to evaluate what they do in response to that, like their best, you know, strategy to deal with that decision. We can't be like, well, we can't ding him for Kelce retiring, other than you're acknowledging the loss of what it is. And if they're better or worse, sure, I get that part of it. But if we're grading them in terms of what they can do about it, yeah, I mean, that's more fair. So yeah, I think I'll say C, like a C+, but it's like a 77 or like a 78 maybe, as opposed to like a 79, but whatever. Okay. This has been BGN Radio 385. Check out all our sponsor information, social media information, and so on in the episode description. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube, searching the video version of this podcast if you would like. Our beautiful shining faces are here for you. Jimmy and I are going to talk about the defensive moves next in BGN Radio episode 386, which we'll be recording in a mere matter of minutes here in reality.
Maybe a little key break first and then right back.
I was going to say, I kind of do want to take like a little bit of a break for, you know, potty break and whatnot. Just like you keep track of when the, you know, the Eagles or players are taking their potty breaks.
I haven't done that in a while. That was it was a hashtag PP watch.
Uh-huh. Jason Kelce was a big PP watch guy, right?
Yeah, he used to do every day during a certain period. This is the chip days when they were like kind of flying through drills or whatever. And they're also like super hydrated too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, PP watch was a very creepy feature that I had that people enjoyed.
It's a veteran move, right? Like to, you know, get a little break too. You can take a couple reps off potentially, depending on when you're doing it. All right. Yeah, check out the next episode.
Goodbye, everybody.
BGN.